From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Monday morning edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready. I am again in the Clark Ford studio. Neil is headed back from Chicago later today. He and Carson taking their annual weekend trip. We talked about it on Friday. Finally got a Cubs win on Sunday. It took a while, but you got a soccer win on Saturday. You got a Cubs win on Sunday, so at least ending on a high note. And what turned out to be a pretty eventful weekend. Seemed quiet for most of it, and then last night, basically all hell broke loose. Rebel Rags as an entity suing Lindsey Miller, Kobe Jones, Leo Lewis, defamation of character, some other thing, or defamation of something, and some other things there as well. We'll discuss that. Hugh Freeze, Barney Farrar, Maurice Harris, and Chris Kiffin's responses were released to the media, virtue of FOI request on Friday afternoon as well. So again, little bit of news over the weekend for it to be the middle of June coming up. I really thought, Neil, that yesterday was going to be a pretty low-key day. I went and hit some golf balls, went to the pool, and thought, oh, this is great. Got home and saw that a clothing store was suing multiple Mississippi State football players. So it turned on a dime, I would say.
Yeah, I got back in last night. We went and watched the U.S.-Mexico soccer game and got back and saw that the internet had blown up again. The whole thing's fascinating. It's you and I were talking before we got started. The day will come when we have to get in our helicopter, if you will, and get above it and write about the big picture. And I really don't even know where to start.
Get in the helicopter and get above it. I haven't heard you say that before. It's a good little.
I mean, you got to get above the story. You know, yeah. It's so easy because of where we live and how personal it is for so many people. It's so easy to get hung up in minutia. I always think about how we end up one day. I know no one listening to this thinks about it journalistically. I do. It's just how I'm wired. I think about how are we ever going to put this entire thing in proper context? And it gets more complicated all the time. And as these lawsuits go forward, assuming they do go forward, I think it's going to get problematic for a lot of people. Really problematic for Leo Lewis. Probably very problematic for the investigators. Potentially problematic for the people who granted immunity, which gets you into the NCAA offices. It potentially gets you into the SEC offices to a degree. I mean, I'm not an attorney. We're going to end up having to talk to some attorneys because I don't want to be wrong, but I just think sometimes I want to go back and look at how did this get started and why? And how did we get here? Because this is the middle of June 2017, and this story, if these lawsuits go forward, they're not going to be adjudicated for, what, a couple of years?
Yeah,
it's going to end up being a decade-long story.
The NCAA is going to have to rule in a case where a lawsuit is overhanging and there is at least the potential for members of the investigation or the NCAA process on both sides to have to basically speak under oath, and that it presents such a potential black eye down the road, in my opinion. That's where that comes, is you give out these sanctions, and let's say the NCAA goes, no, Leo Lewis, credible, all good. And then later you find out the NCAA, or the legal system says, no, he lied about this and that, and he actually owes somebody damages. And again, I'm being hyperbolic, and I'm just kind of guessing here, but who knows? I mean, it's fascinating. I mean, it's like here, and we've always talked about, oh, well, Ole Miss can't sue the NCAA. Ole Miss is a member of the NCAA. They're a volunteer member. They're part of the process. It's the the departments and the chancellors and the presidents that make up the NCAA. But I'm reading here from Sports Illustrated, Pete Thamel and Michael McCann did an outstanding job last night in a story there that is linked on the board, and I'll reference it a good bit during the show today. Charlie Merkel, the attorney for Rebel Rag, says, "We're not a volunteer member. We don't have to dance to their tune." And then going into the text now, "The same, of course, is not true for NCAA-affiliated schools. Because of their membership agreements with the NCAA and related contractual obligations, NCAA members are greatly limited in being able to sue the NCAA. Expect Rebel Rags to gradually expand lawsuit to include other persons as defendants," according to Merkel. "As more facts surface, Rebel Rags will likely expand the lawsuit to include those who may have negotiated with the NCAA for immunity from punishment." So...
what's your, I know we have some bills to pay in a second, your gut feeling today, do the investigators in this case, do they view these lawsuits as a problem for them, or do they view them as even more motivation to, quote, get Ole Miss?
Well, two things to that. Number one, the investigation's over. So if they had more motivation, that time has passed.
Well, I mean, to double down on saying, nope, you know what? You guys wrote a really fancy legal document, and you pointed out all sorts of little minor discrepancies. And I'm not saying the discrepancies are minor before the handful of you freak out. I'm just saying from their perspective. Do they?
Well, begin. It's about the COI. It's not about the investigators at this point. And oh, I mean, I don't know what those 10 people think.
But the investigators have to respond to Ole Miss's response in the next 60 days.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an opportunity for them, technically, before this thing ever gets to the COI, to walk this thing back. I mean, they could come back.
It's a weird spot for them in that because, again, it's not Ole Miss suing them. You know what I mean? I mean, right. it's so this third party, I mean, and it's like, and look, the investigators have a problem here because when I first read Ole Miss's response, the Rebel Rags thing was the first thing that stuck out to me and went, oh, they're clear. They're going to get out of this. I mean, above all other persuasive arguments that Ole Miss made or tried to make in that document, there were none that were more clear, concise, and persuasive than the Rebel Rags part. There's no doubt. So that's what's interesting here. I mean, Terry has, to this point, has not been disassociated. Rebel Rags has not been disassociated.
I think Ole Miss knows if Terry Warren was disassociated even temporarily that he would sue Ole Miss.
Yeah, that's fair. So, I don't know. Let's dig into it. Before we do that, podcast is always brought to you by the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford. Pick up the Plenty card, PLENTI.com, to see more about the retailers that are involved with that, American Express, Hulu, Nationwide, Rite Aid, and more to help you earn points and save money. Also, remember that where you see blue sky, that's still critical. I know in Oxford, Circle K has become blue sky. Same people, same great service there on Highway 6 West. Also, head over to Oxford Crystal, 5 for $5 mix and match. Includes the chicken fried steak, also includes the fried chicken in your 5 for $5. So take advantage of that and more, including lunch specials, $4.99 every single day. And again, at least I am in the Clark Ford studio.
Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. ClarkFordInc.com is the website. That's ClarkFordInc.com. Call that number. Ask for Corey. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes. Then it's up to you. You get your quote. You can shop it around. You can make all sorts of calls. It's fine. Or you can do what so many other podcast listeners have done, from Cape Girardeau to Biloxi, from Atlanta to Shreveport, and that's take the everyday hassle out of the car buying experience. It's nice and easy. Again, right to the bottom line. You get a great deal, great service after the sale, all of that at Clark Ford in Amory. And then when you're talking to Corey and you're finalizing your deal, tell him, say, hey, I heard about the dealership on the podcast. You can mention this one. You can mention the beer garden. Either one, $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory.
So one of the more interesting parts of this, and again, I'm giving Michael McCann a lot of credit here because I'm not a lawyer. I don't have a illegal mind by any stretch of the imagination. Again, we'll get some of that to you as we can on this just evolving narrative on the podcast. You listen to us every day, so we'll get plenty of that to you. But for today, these paragraphs, NSI, in order to prevail in a defamation lawsuit, quoting, Rebel Rags will need to prove that the defendants made relatively specific statements about the store that were factual sounding, statements asserting that recruits received free merchandise from Rebel Rags on specific dates and for certain values would, if untrue, likely embody defamatory remarks. In contrast, statements that more accurately viewed as opinions or subjective depictions are less likely to be viewed by a court as defamatory. A description of a booster's attitude or motivations would, for instance, probably not count in a defamation lawsuit if it can't be proven or disproven. The interesting part of that is that Ole Miss went really out of their way. And I don't know if they knew this was coming or not, or if it was just standard practice in their response, to talk about all the people that denied that the payments took place, or that the free apparel took place the way that was depicted. They even quoted who I'm believing to be Jeffrey Simmons talking about paying for his own things, and then had lots of student athletes and lots of family members arguing that nothing had been taken or given for free. And there did appear to be some inconsistencies in the way that things were depicted on how that the free apparel was allegedly taken. Just on a first glance by someone that's very much a layman, it looks like if Ole Miss's response is correct, if it's correct, there's a bit of a case there.
Yeah. I mean, if what Ole Miss is saying and what Terry Warren is saying, then the accusations are lies. That's why I want to see what happens in the next 60 days. Does the NCAA back off? Do they erase it? Do they say, you know what, upon further review, or do they stand by it? Do they double down? Because there's no choice but one or the other. Just so everyone's hung up on the COI. I am all of a sudden hung up on the one thing that we never really talked about. It's the investigators' answer to Ole Miss's answers.
And you may never see it.
May never see it, but we'll know eventually what it was.
What about this thing? And I'm just kind of thinking out loud more than anything else. The timing of this, by waiting now to do it, it's doubtful that much of the legal process plays out prior to the response, prior to the NCAA COI or any of that. I mean, we're probably not getting to that point. Had this been done even a little earlier, probably could have deposed Lewis and Jones and Lindsey Miller and already have those depositions out in the, I don't know about in the open, but at least in a court where they had to answer under oath. Is that because they had to wait until Ole Miss's response and see how it was getting depicted as far as finding it or not? Was there some part of that that played a role into this? Because it would seem that at this point it's almost being drug out unnecessarily if you were trying to get Lewis's deposition prior to the COI.
I mean, again, I'm not an attorney. The only thing the only thing I would guess is that perhaps they were waiting to see whether how Ole Miss would respond, whether Ole Miss would dispute it or not, because, I mean, I'm just guessing here. If Ole Miss comes out and says, yeah, we're guilty, that happened, we fall on the court and beg for its mercy as it pertains to this charge, and we, I would assume in that scenario, we disassociate ourselves from Terry Warren and Rebel Rags, that Ole Miss would have been included in the lawsuit.
Right.
Maybe it was simple as just waiting to see who all do you need to sue here so you can get it all done with one big brush.
Once again, I don't think it's one big brush. I'm hearing there'll be added people to this as it evolves, and that's also what SI said from Charlie Merkel.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's the one thing that stuck out to me in the whole response was about Lewis and Ole Miss not getting an opportunity to either be present or to cross-examine him. And I wondered, why was that? It had to be because the NCAA didn't want him cross-examined. It wasn't because, well, we didn't have time. It wasn't an opportunity. The NCAA didn't want him cross-examined. It's the only conclusion I can reach. Well, now he's going to be examined and cross-examined.
Well, yeah. Now, who knows when?
And if, I don't know. I mean, you know, the legal process is not, nor should it be, in tune with the NCAA investigative process. So I don't know how that works. I don't know how quickly depositions get done. Lewis, I would assume, has to now get out and try to find an attorney. And he's got about a $10,000 budget to get it done. And so that's hard. I mean, you're going up against someone like Merkel.
No, it's already been accounted for how all that was spent. Did you not read the response? Come on.
So the money's gone. So hell, I don't know how he's going to pay for an attorney. He doesn't have a driver's license yet.
I know a guy in Starkville might do some pro bono work. He replaced Lindsey Miller Esquire in a previous.
There's only so much pro bono work you can do. At some point, you got to pay the bills.
Well, it's a lot like recruiting, Neil. You can probably do a lot of pro bono work when someone else makes sure that it's not necessarily pro bono under a table.
Well, fair enough.
I mean, just taking. Hey, we actually saw an appearance from Matthew Wilson in this SI article. Did you see that?
I guess I did not read it as detailed as you did. I ran through it a little bit. Fill me in.
Well, you know, Matthew Wilson is Lindsey Miller's attorney.
Oh, yes. I know who he is.
Okay. Remember that?
Yeah, sure.
All right. I'm kind of glad we get Lindsey back in this, too. I kind of miss Lindsey.
Well, I miss Lindsey. I will forever miss Lindsey Miller Esquire.
You're really upset that Wilson gave a statement here and Miller didn't give a statement himself and wanted to represent himself again in this situation, aren't you?
I mean, it's hard for me to put into words.
We've gotten Steve Freese versus Lindsey Miller Esquire. We should really get Charlie Markle versus Lindsey Miller Esquire next.
I'd pay.
You'd show up.
It was, all I can say is John Davis and I were the only two media members there that day. Everyone else missed out, and John and I were thoroughly.
Better than any episode of Judge Judy for a lot less money, isn't it?
What's that?
A lot better than Judge Judy for a lot less money.
I mean,
you know, she makes like $40 million a year.
All I had to do, yeah, I know she's making a ton. All I had to do was just drive from my house to that, basically to the square, and give up about an hour and 15 minutes of my time on a Friday afternoon. And it was,
it still cracked me up that Farish showed up himself, but then part of me goes, I bet he couldn't miss that either. When I got time. It'd be all right.
He kept a straight face the whole time, which is more than me or
John. Well, he was even uncomfortable when it went to the kid and stuff, wasn't he?
Yeah, no, that got hard. That was the part of it. Now, that was the sobering reality part. I have chosen in my mind to block that out.
Yeah.
And just focus on the legal maneuverings of Lindsey Miller Esquire.
With the big red Ole Miss knee brace?
Yeah.
God. Laramie's offensive line brace?
Yeah.
I don't think Doc Field hands those out to just normal patients very often. I just have a hunch.
And the bailiff in the back. He was trying so hard not to laugh. Oh, God, it was great. Anyway, I mean, I don't know where this thing goes. I mean,
I got to read Matthew Wilson's statement.
Oh, sorry.
That's what I'm doing. All right. Miller's lawyer, Matthew Wilson of Spring Hill, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Released a statement to Sports Illustrated regarding the suit on Sunday night. Lindsey Miller has been named in a lawsuit that was filed by a particular retail outlet. Why don't you just name them? It's already been filed. The complaint relates to comments Mr. Miller allegedly made to the NCAA. Well, they weren't allegedly made. They were made. Mr. Miller intends to mount a vigorous defense to the complaint in a court of law. A Mississippi State athletic department official declined comment, and Ross Bjork did not return a message seeking comment as well. Yeah, I highly doubt that John Cohen has a comment on this at the moment.
Yeah. Right now, John Cohen just wants to say, hey, I'm just a baseball coach.
Didn't sign up for this one. Oh, man.
Leo Lewis play this fall? If you're state?
Yeah.
All right, so here's my here's
why are
my
you problem. Not why are you not playing him? What grounds to the individual? And I'm being a little attorney here, but really.
I'd be fearful that you're paying somebody who could you'd have to go back and forfeit those games.
Him changing his number to 39 would be the best troll job of all time, right?
At that point it just becomes
I mean I'm kidding, but
I mean if he did it I mean I think a lot of people would say, oh wow, and kind of giggle, and then you'd think this thing got out of hand years ago. I'll say this part of the rivalry would never happen in Alabama and Auburn.
Don't think so?
No. People might burn down trees and stuff. Fans might do stupid stuff. But the two schools would never have allowed this to get to this place.
They put it in the response. We mentioned it in passing. Everybody kind of laughed about it at the time. Was the Joker GIF relevant? Does that show malicious intent?
Probably not. Does it show his mindset to a degree? Yeah.
Fine line between the two.
I don't think he's smart enough to have that level of intent. I think someone put him up to it.
Do you?
Yeah. Look.
Who?
Can we keep this real here?
Say what you want.
When Leo Lewis was going through the recruiting process, he was a high-profile recruit for, what, 2 years?
It's fair.
We heard a lot about him. You and I both have different sources in recruiting. It's one of the things back in the day before our boy Russell joined us, one of the things that made us pretty good at recruiting was we didn't get emotional about it, and B, we had different sources.
Well, he was committed to three different SEC schools. You know, it's what everybody always forgets. He originally committed to Alabama.
And they bailed on him.
He decommitted, committed to Ole Miss, and then Alabama kind of left the picture at that point.
No, they didn't kind of leave the picture. They bailed on the picture.
And I've got two theories on why, but go ahead.
Well, I have two theories on it, too. Okay. One of those is because they knew it was going to get ugly. They knew there were people around him that it was going to get ugly.
Dan Mullen and Hugh Freeze do a really good job through numerous ways of locking down the state of Mississippi once a kid gets into that part of the situation.
Yeah. And if you're Alabama at that point in time, hell, at this point in time, it's not like you can't go get another good linebacker. Move on.
Probably not getting him, and that looks really messy, so let's avoid the mess.
Yeah, let's go to the next. But we heard more. We hear stuff about every class. You hear stuff about every class. We heard more about Lewis's recruiting. I've been on this in this role for 9 years. I heard more about his recruiting than I heard about. I can only think of maybe one possible person that I heard more about his recruiting than I did Lewis's.
Who?
I don't want to say.
Oh, okay. I'm kind of curious now. All right. All right, let's get into this. You and Dan Wolken had a back and forth on this on Twitter yesterday. By the way, Dan's on tomorrow's podcast. We'll talk to him about all this stuff and more. He's confirmed since then, right? Again, Neil, still
yeah,
good.
Yeah, he confirmed last night.
Okay.
And a real quick aside here: are we going to ask tough questions? Absolutely. I mean, he's coming on because he does not appreciate the way that we have portrayed him. We're going to give him an opportunity to say what he wants about us. And I have questions about how he's portrayed himself and how he, some of the things he said. Are we going to treat him unprofessionally? No, we never have. We're not going to do that. We're not going to be the emotional people defending Ole Miss. That's not our job. We're going to have a conversation.
Yeah, we've discussed what we're going to ask. We'll continue to evolve that in the next 24 hours or so. But it was mentioned, okay, everybody, as you said, anybody around recruiting knew that the Lewis recruitment situation was not normal, was bad even in a environment that gets bad at times.
It stunk in a junkyard.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So, and it's that deal where he's ranked where he's ranked. He's at a major position in need. It's part of the reason Ole Miss stayed in, even though they knew what was going on and even though they were under investigation. State stayed in because they just thought they had him the whole time, frankly.
Because they did.
Yeah. And then C, why did LSU stay in, A? And B, why did LSU stay in to the point of getting caught up in this mess now where they're potentially liable too?
I think LSU stayed in it because Demetric Warren led them to believe that they had a shot. They liked him. Brookhaven's not far from Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
I think they thought they had – we might find out that there were people associated with the LSU program that thought they had a deal.
Yeah, I mean, some,
keeping this perfectly real.
Some of Ole Miss's responses don't really allude. They say that Lewis admitted to taking money from another school.
Ole Miss stayed on Lewis because at the time Ole Miss was they needed linebackers and blah, blah, blah. This applies to most every college staff. Most every college staff will tell you that they don't care about rankings. Most every college staff cares about rankings a lot. Ole Miss wanted Lewis's ranking. I know for an absolute fact there were people inside the Ole Miss program who were wary of Leo Lewis, who didn't like some of the vibes, plural, didn't like the vibe that was given off by his recruiting.
But didn't completely get away from it till the weekend before signing day.
Or didn't win the argument.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, the single biggest question from Ole Miss's NOA and its response to the NOA is the text between Farrar and Booster, whatever he is, mm-hmm. the attorney in the Jackson area.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that has to get explained at some point.
Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss admitted contact between Sid Booster and Leo Lewis.
And I mean, let's keep that part real, too. If we're going to do this, I mean, that Booster's not getting in contact with Leo Lewis to have a conversation about what do you think about the weather? How you guys going to do Friday night? Come on. Lewis was dirty. The recruiting was dirty. And there were multiple people feeding it.
Yeah, and potentially multiple victims now out of it. So
it's why I get into my question. I was on Andy Staples' show last night for just a few minutes. And I asked Andy, I said, so to me, and we're jumping around, forgive me. To me, when the NCAA now takes a step back and looks at Leo Lewis as from a credibility standpoint, okay? Seems to me they kind of have three choices. One is they can continue to do what they've done to this point, which is, well, we believe certain things, we disbelieve other things. The fact that he lied about all these other things doesn't change the fact that we think he's telling the truth here and we're moving forward. And I would argue that that is a really dangerous proposition for the NCAA. It's a really bad look for the NCAA. And it now obviously will lead to a lot of legal action against the NCAA, which ultimately could cost a lot of people, including the investigators themselves, money.
Well, it's kind of like, I'll ask him tomorrow, or we'll ask him tomorrow. When I read Dan, and I mean read him as in trying to get inside his head, not his actual words, and he talks about how, well, the NCAA must deem Lewis credible for a reason, I kind of put two and two together here. Wilkins has been one of the main authors of stories about John Duncan and the improvement of the NCAA investigative process since that woman was fired or let go again. I can't remember her name, the Horizon commissioner. And I think it's because he has such a strong belief that they are different, and he's convinced himself that they are different, that it's not necessarily he's saying Lewis is credible. It's that he's saying, well, they've got to have more because what we do see is so stupid from a truth standpoint.
Okay, so back to my point. So if you're the NCAA, at this point, if you double down on Leo Lewis as credible, what do you do about the $10,000 that came from another institution? Do you open that investigation? What do you do?
Well, the NCAA is the same institution that told Walter Hughes or whoever that they didn't care that he gave money about Arkansas. It was just about Ole Miss. Just saying.
Yeah, and if that's the case, then frankly, if that's the case, then I question why anyone, I hate to do this to my own business, why do any of you decide to care? I'd have to look at it and go, whatever, it's rigged.
Selective enforcement.
Yeah. They can't, that can't be the look going forward. I mean, I've already talked to people today who are like, this has to be the beginning of the restructuring of the investigative branch of the NCAA. And I'm like, another restructuring? It looks, so to me, they have two choices. They either say, you know what, Lewis isn't credible, throw it out. Or we're doubling down on Lewis.
And I was told Friday that everything from an evidence standpoint has already been presented to Ole Miss. It's not like the NCAA has extra evidence that they're going to throw out in a response or in the COI. Now, look, just reading Ole Miss's response or in the kind of the NOA with the response under it, there wasn't just unbelievable detail there. So there could be things that weren't in the NOA that Ole Miss knows about. There is an exclusivity there where I think Ole Miss knows everything that they are being tried against. However, I don't necessarily think that document that I read contained every single shred of evidence either. So that's where I kind of wonder a little bit, although as detailed as Ole Miss was, they appeared to attack basically everything or basically admit to everything that they had to admit to. So I think we saw basically what was here, what they have, and in that case, My opinion hasn't changed in the last week. A really weird look for the NCAA and a really bad look for Leo Lewis.
I agree.
So,
I mean, last week, from a PR standpoint, Ole Miss won the week.
And they should have won the week. It was their time to talk.
But beyond a PR standpoint, and again, I do know it's not a court, and I know reasonable doubt isn't. There's more than a little reasonable doubt here. There's boatloads full of reasonable doubt. But I'm more interested in what the NCAA does now going forward. I don't know whether we'll see you and I will hear about it. It'll eventually kind of leak a little bit. Here's what they said in their response. They're in a weird spot here over the next 50 days or so.
There's a lot of truth to that. So
this case hangs in the balance.
Before we shift gears, tell you podcast brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga, 30 years old this year. One of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast, our underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. So you're getting local underwriting and understands your market. Also the leader in condo financing in Oxford. Ask Jason about Community Mortgage's float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. Contact Jason Lowe, 662-234-2704. J-Lowe, J-L-O-W-E. At communitymtg.com.
I saw Jason at Wrigley on Friday.
Yeah, I heard he was like 15 rows behind you or something.
Yeah, were up at the top of the section we were in. It was freezing that day, and then yesterday it was like a gazillion degrees. The podcast also brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disabilities claims. Check out their website at msbnkr.com or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com. Super Lawyers only selects the top 5% of lawyers in the state. Gambrell & Associates, they handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando at 662-342-7700 or Oxford at 662-281-8800. The podcast also brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. 7 South owned and operated by Kyle and Jordan Thornton, both of whom avid Ole Miss fans, Ole Miss alums. 7 South equipped with the largest staff in the Grove that can service most any of your tailgating needs. They offer SEC only and full season packages. They have rental packages available, or you can bring your own gear and 7 South will set it up for you. They offer complete setup, game day concierge, post-game trash removal, equipment breakdown, and year-round storage. They'll set up anywhere in the Grove, the Circle, or on the outskirts of campus. Basically, with 7 South, if you give them a try for one season, you'll never tailgate without them again. The site is 7southtailgating.com, or you can reach them at 662-321-1682. The podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. They're an American standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their site, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast, you get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane at 662-832-8749.
All right, same topic, but switch around a little bit here. Let me turn something off. Sorry. All right, whatever. Okay, so responses came out Friday. Again, Ole Miss released those through Freedom of Information Act request. Freeze, Kiffin, Nix, Harris, and Farrar. Obviously, Freeze and Barney were the two more obvious ones that most people wanted to know about. A couple things here in this. Number one, we got a Freeze mention of the notorious tape that has been discussed for a long time now.
We did.
Oh, kind of cracked me up. Do we see any comment from AL.com? I mean, Kevin Skarbinski was really concerned about that tape last year. Is he still just as concerned?
They said it didn't exist. That we made it up, you know, because we're just a fan site.
Said that the tape, if it exists, had nothing defamatory against anyone in it. Is what it's.
Oh yeah.
Had no consequence.
They talked about the weather. Hot that day.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, most of the time when you're trying to bargain through things, I mean, just in general, it's kind of like if you go to Clark Ford, and I go in and Corey, and I go, Corey, you know, is it Chevy I really want? It's in Tupelo. And they said they'd give it to me for $22.5. Well, that's really just a non sequitur. I mean, I really had no purpose for telling Corey that. I just kind of popped in my mind, and I thought, you know, not the worst thing to say. I'll let Corey know about my day. What was going on in Tupelo today?
Yeah, you told him about that, and then maybe you said, you know, I read a great book. I read a great book this week. You weren't saying, hey, this is the price you have to beat. If you want me, you weren't saying, hey, Corey, if you want me to buy this Ford, you're going to have to go under this number. No, no, you were just telling him, hey, I had an experience.
Friendly conversations.
I wanted to share that with you.
Yeah. All right, paragraph here from Freeze, or from his attorney, who I know we're shocked here, did a nice job with the document. All the attorneys are very impressive. Jesse Mitchell did one. I think W.C. Watkins did Freeze's. A lot of impressive documents. Then there was
Watkins has a pretty strong reputation.
Yeah. There has been a really good meeting of legal minds in the state and the region through this whole process. I will say that. Because I mean, we even go back to Freeze with Lindsey Miller. I mean, we've seen a lot of attorneys' names through this mess.
So you just use Watkins, Freeze, and Miller all in your conversation about legal minds. Good for you, Chase.
Yeah.
Carry on.
Yeah. Sorry, Steve and Jesse, for the association there. All right, specifically related to the allegations in this case, Coach Freeze learned that – what in the world? Hold on a second. Did you hear that?
No.
you know, we've got our little like Skype audio number, like where guests can call and like people we're interviewing can call into the show.
Yeah.
It just rang.
Who called?
Well, I didn't answer. Literally no one has that number.
Maybe Lindsay Miller.
They heard us telepathically.
Maybe he's really good. Maybe he just wanted to come on and have a conversation.
That is strange that number rang. Nobody has that number. Must have been a telemarketer or a missed call. I mean, a wrong number.
Probably a telemarketer. Probably about your car insurance.
Okay. Or, yeah. All right. Anyway, so specifically related to the allegations in this case, Coach Freeze learned that Blank's mother told Farrar over the phone that two other institutions had offered Blank tens of thousands of dollars each. Upon learning this, he immediately asked Farrar pointed questions about how he'd responded to ensure he had handled it appropriately. He is unsure whether they reported the mother's claims to compliance at the time, since rumors are rampant and they had no evidence to corroborate her claims. Soon after, however, a Snapchat video surfaced of Blank flashing a large amount of cash after signing day. He immediately reported the video to compliance and Farrar's account of the phone conversation. At that time, he also learned that Farrar had recorded the phone call with Blank's mother, so he immediately reported that fact to compliance and the athletic director and forwarded the recording. He also listened to the recording to confirm that Farrar had responded the way he had initially reported to Coach Freeze and was satisfied on that point.
Why is Ole Miss not released? See, this is where I'm not criticizing anybody at Ole Miss, but I'd have leaked that damn. If that phone conversation indeed is that, if that is indeed the accurate portrayal of what is in the phone conversation, and I have no reason to believe it's not. And in fact, if there was any chance that it wasn't, it wouldn't be in his legal response. Why has Ole Miss not released that? I'd have gone on the offensive with that a long time ago.
The only thing that I find odd in this paragraph is it makes mention that Freeze listened to the recording to hear Farrar's response, which allows me to infer that the entire conversation was correct as to how Barney referenced it. And maybe this is just because it only pertains to Freeze and that specified interest. But it doesn't say that the entire call went the way that Barney referenced it. Does that bother you, or is that just legal wording?
I don't know. Could very well be something there. It put
my antenna up a little bit, but I really don't even know why. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, there's a chance that something's nuanced a little bit here.
Just when you're trying to completely look at the tape as being something, that kind of bugged me the way it was phrased back from the attorneys.
Well, I think this is where I think this is where Ole Miss has a problem as it pertains with Lewis. I'm not saying it's not solvable or any of that, but it's a problem as it pertains to Lewis, because there was booster contact with Lewis, and that booster was in contact with Farrar. There's Ole Miss probably has to nuance a little bit some of the things as it pertains to Lewis's recruiting.
So, okay. That was the one thing from Freeze. Also, again, in the responses, it makes mention of Lewis receiving money from another institution. I don't have that exact quote in front of me, but it's there. So we've already talked about it, is what it is. We'll see how the NCAA responds to that from Ole Miss's response, or from their interviews, either way. Barney's response, prepared by Bruce Lloyd, as Bruce Lloyd told us on the podcast and has since said, Watkins was also defending Farrar until the end of March, correct? To have that accurately?
Yes.
Okay. So Lloyd takes over at that time. He writes this response, which was dated a couple days prior to Ole Miss's response. I don't know if that has any relevance or anything or not. Just, again, something I noticed. It was unimpressive from the standpoint of spelling and grammar, which seems like a really odd thing in this case. Does it not?
Yeah. You were just talking about all the... where it was obvious that you were dealing with some really, really polished attorneys in these responses. Farrar's did not read as polished.
Yeah, for whatever reason, and it almost is to the point where it makes me question, was it on purpose or something? Which makes no sense, but it was basic attorney things that were not correct that you never see as you read it. And I'm not saying that the content. I'm not necessarily questioning one way or the other the content. I'm just saying when you read a document that has spelling and grammatical errors, you automatically lessen your view of said document just from a layman reading something. So that's the first thing that I noticed while I was reading. I'm not contradicting the facts. I'm just saying that it becomes a less persuasive document when there are errors in it.
Yeah, you get emails from people that want to take issue with something you said. If they're written well and they're grammatically sound, you put more stock into them than you do if they're full of misspellings and grammatical errors and name-calling.
So the paragraph where it was game on from Barney to Mississippi State, and it doesn't take, as I tweeted, it doesn't take a decoder ring here to figure this out. Redacted name is the only witness that provided any purported evidence against Coach Farrar. Redacted name is a young man that now plays football for Ole Miss's blank rival and blank. A young man likely lured into this witch hunt by his own head coach so he could escape NCAA charges himself, deflect his misdeeds onto Farrar and Ole Miss, and keep his eligibility to play for blank. A young man who undeservedly was given immunity as the NCAA enforcement staff deliberately turned away from his own admitted violations so that it could pursue the school and the recruiter it really wanted, Ole Miss and Barney Farrar. Not a very subtle paragraph.
No, not subtle at all. So any part of you think, because that's clearly, does any part of you think this was a setup from the beginning? That Lewis always knew where he was going and that this was a game?
The entire time the motive was to set up Ole Miss?
Is that possible?
Possible, sure. I don't necessarily think so, though. I think maybe it became that at some point, but I don't think that was it the whole time. I don't think that was the case when I hung out with Leo Lewis for the majority of a day at a Rivals Camp Series stop in Hattiesburg. I forget the date to it, but he was hurt or something, and he wasn't participating.
I remember this.
So he stood and talked to me and Mike Farrell for, 3 hours? And it wasn't that I had a better opinion of him after it. It wasn't that I really had a changed opinion or I had much of any opinion at all. But looking back on that now, and I get it was just 1 3-hour snapshot, that was fairly early in the process. I don't believe that he had a motive at that point, no. At some point, sure. Why not? I mean, at this point, why not believe that? But no, I don't think the whole time. I think that would have taken planning and people and a lot more hushed mouths than would have been possible for that length of a time period. You?
Yeah, and it's my gut feeling. My gut feeling is it would have been too complicated to it would have been too complicated to dream this up that far ahead of time. I've had people ask me that. That's why I asked you. But no, I don't think so. I don't know where it changed. I do think that he knew he was going to miss Mississippi State for a while that fall, and we heard it, and there was a confidence out of Mississippi State that was very similar, frankly, to the confidence that Mississippi State had about Jeffrey Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Not sure.
Something tells me Leo Lewis wishes now that he had never spoken to the NCAA.
The number that called us, by the way, was from El Dorado, Kansas.
Maybe it's a JUCO.
I don't know anybody in El Dorado, Kansas.
Hmm?
I don't know anybody in Kansas, El Dorado, Kansas.
Never been to Kansas.
Speaking of, did you see Dwight Colby sign with Western Kentucky?
I did.
Yeah. Jeff Goodman again saying smart money on Rick Stansberry.
might be the only place right now that will pay Dwight Colby to play basketball.
Well, see, that was kind of my problem with that thing from Goodman. And I know it's just his shtick and he does it every single time, but I thought if Western Kentucky had to shell out for Dwight Colby, no offense, Dwight, what are we doing?
It got to be a better way to spend your money. There's got to be a better investment plan.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't the top 100 kid that Western Kentucky signed. In fact, they signed two of them. Fair enough. But I don't know. Man. Also, let's just point this out. Barney Farrar's response. I'm not going to read the two paragraphs completely. And 100% defends Hugh Freeze.
He did.
So you get in front of the COI. Let's say Barney says the same thing in front of the COI. Let's say he says the same things that are in his response. I'm not saying it's the end-all, be-all. I'm not saying it's for sure getting Ole Miss off of all of its charges by any means. But if you walk in and Hugh Freeze goes, I had no idea Barney tricked me, and essentially that's what Freeze's response says. And Barney goes, Freeze had no idea I tricked him. Isn't it kind of hard for the COI to argue that when both sides say the same thing?
It is, unless, and I hate to be repetitive, unless you are the NCAA and you are saying, we believe Leo Lewis, and that is our evidence. Because if you don't believe Leo Lewis, a lot of the case against Barney Farrar gets shaky. Not all of it, but a lot of it. If you're the NCAA, what do you do about Leo Lewis now? Do you stand by him as a witness, or do you bail on him as a witness? Because let's keep this real. If the NCAA investigators were to bail on the majority of this case, these lawsuits are going to go away.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, they are.
I don't think it's as simple for Rebel Rags, though, of Rebel Rags getting cleared in the NCAA document. I don't think it's that succinct.
If the allegations were dropped.
You think if all the Rebel Rags allegations are dropped, then that lawsuit goes away?
I think it'd be harder for them. And again, I'm not an attorney. It would be harder for them going forward to prove damages.
I mean, because currently they're trying to prove past damages and different things along those lines that have happened to this point.
Yeah, I just, my gut feeling is that if much of the second NOA was scrapped, that much of the incentive to sue would disappear as well.
Mm-hmm.
But to do that, you have to say Lewis is not credible as a witness, and you throw out all of his testimony. If you throw out all of Lewis's testimony, you don't really have that much on Barney Farrar anymore. If you don't have Rebel Rags, if you being the NCAA no longer have Rebel Rags and you no longer have Leo Lewis as evidence against Farrar, what do you have? That he set up a meal at Funky's?
Just kind of doing some cross show talk here. Steve Robertson has been a critical figure in this throughout. He was on Bounds this morning.
Okay.
And here's just a couple quotes. I'm getting this from a buddy, so take that for what it's worth, but I'll take his word for it. Says Robertson admits that this lawsuit is likely damaging to the NCAA on using immunity in the future. Says that Barney and Chris would likely be disposed, in his opinion, since they're named in allegation number 9, which is true. I mean, we're just kind of repeating what we said. I'm just kind of giving everybody a thorough thing here. And then they also surmise that it could eventually involve COI members and investigators for granting said immunity, which, again, common sense. I'm just throwing it out there. So,
right.
That was about it. They moved on to other topics after that.
Like what?
Well, there was a baseball game last night, Neil. Mississippi State, LSU.
Yeah, congratulations to LSU. What a shot. Finally got to Omaha. Good for you, Tigers.
Cinderella in their slipper.
Yeah.
Was a pretty painful game one loss for State. It was 3-0 Mississippi State in the 8th inning, and LSU scored 4 in the inning and won 4-3.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's what's funny is I was kind of laughing on Twitter, and I'm watching, and I'm thinking, well, State, you know, playing above its head all year, had a great season. You never know. They've been out of so many jams. But there's a lot of State people that were, like, just counting it as a win already. And I'm like, you do realize it's, like, 11 p.m. in Alex Box Stadium. This thing's not done yet till you get that 27th out.
Man. I actually saw the replay of it on Sunday morning on, like, ESPNU or ESPNH or one of the ESPNs that's in here.
Yeah.
And, damn, it got away quick.
Mm-hmm. Then last night, State took a 4-3 lead in the third or fourth inning. They had 1,000 rain delays and tons of rain, and LSU eventually won 14-4.
Yeah.
So State was just out of pitching.
State had to win the first game to have a chance.
Yeah, you couldn't let that thing go the duration.
I mean, again, it's just LSU's a what they've done with baseball is just they're a power.
Texas A&M, one of the last teams into the field. Now they're headed to the College World Series. They beat Davidson over the weekend. Did you see the catch, no catch with A&M and Davidson?
I did not.
Okay. So Davidson, your three scholarship heroes from North Carolina.
Yep.
They lose game one in 15 innings. So had plenty of chances to win game one. Game two, they are up 6-5 in the bottom of the eighth, top of the eighth. And bases loaded for A&M. And two outs. There's a pop-up in the infield that four different people could have caught, ended the inning, and let Davidson take a lead into the ninth inning to even the series. The second baseman and the shortstop, if I have it correct, run into each other, both trying to catch the ball. The shortstop, if I have it correct, catches it, and as he's falling to the ground, he basically passes out almost because he's dazed from the collision. So he's falling to the ground. He's on his back. The glove goes limp, and the ball falls out. Two-run score, A&M up 7-6.
Ooh.
At first glance, I thought, well, he's on his back. He stopped moving. That's a catch. The umpires messed up. Reading the rules, it appears that they got the right call. However, they had the ability to review it and didn't. Decline the review. I'll never understand NCAA policies and why people do some of the things they do.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to get outraged over it or anything, but strange. Florida-Wake Forest game two resumes today. Wake Forest currently up a run. Florida up 1-0 in the series. That's in Gainesville. They had torrential thunderstorms all day yesterday. A lot of name recognition in the College World Series. It will be an interesting College World Series from the standpoint of ratings and what they get, because not much of a Cinderella in this year. TCU, LSU, Florida State, Cal State Fullerton, probably Florida, Texas A&M, Oregon State. A lot of names, big schools. Not a deal where you got Coastal Carolina and Davidson and Gonzaga and stuff like that. So,
Andy Staples tweets this morning, just as in the Todd McNair versus NCAA case, if this suit keeps going, NCAA will have to reveal exactly how NCAA investigation was conducted.
Ooh.
To which Dan Wolkin responds and says, but wouldn't NCAA need to be named as a defendant? ? And Andy responds with, give it time, Dan. They'll have to get interview materials either from NCAA, Ole Miss, or Mississippi State. To me, that's what ultimately is the most fascinating thing in this whole thing. When it's all over and you finally do get to get in the aforementioned helicopter, what motivated this? Truly, what got it started? I know we all have theories, but I want to know. I don't want theories. I want facts. What started it? What fueled it? And how were decisions made? All that's documented somewhere. I'd like to see that. If I'm a Power 5 athletic director today, I'm demanding to see that. I need to know. How's this done? Because every Power 5 athletic director out there today is saying to himself, the stuff that I'm reading about with Rebel Rags, with Funkies, with all that stuff, that stuff happens at their school too. You can't control that many businesses and boosters, and there are going to be interactions. So how did this particular case, where when you boil it down, especially if you throw a lot of Lewis's stuff out, there's not much money changing hands.
Kind of coming full circle here. We'll ask him tomorrow. It's not really even a shot. It's just kind of an observation. Even in that tweet, for whatever reason, Dan almost comes across as the, but still hold on and please defend NCAA guy.
Well, and that might be what's more interesting, is that why is he so defensive of the NCAA? And it might be because he
has tons of sources in it.
He's not going to say that to us.
That would be the most logical answer, however.
It would be a logical answer, and you, by defending them, maintain them as sources. Because in the end, his employer judges him on his ability to break stories and to break stories correctly. USA Today wants to be first. They want to be right. They want to be the outlet driving a story. And they depend on him and George Schroeder, maybe Andy Staples and some others to Andy's with that side, never mind. He and George to kind of be those guys.
Mm-hmm.
He's got bosses too. He's got responsibilities as well.
So,
but that's part of the, and look, I'm a huge Andy Staples fan. You know that. Andy's extremely talented. I do his radio show because I enjoy doing it. I do most radio shows because those people are kind enough to do mine, my podcast. I do his show because it's fun. Andy thinks this thing's crazy, but you see that I would be curious to know why Dan felt compelled to respond to Andy there. But wouldn't the NCAA need to be named as a defendant? Well, the NCAA is an entity, not necessarily. I think it's pretty obvious if you read Pete Thamel's story, and I would think Dan did, it's pretty obvious that the investigators in this case are probably eventually going to be named as defendants.
Yeah, I don't expect all the defendants to already be known at this point. So we'll see. Podcast brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, MasterCuts full-service lawn maintenance and landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding areas. No job too large or small for MasterCuts. Some of the services include landscape design and maintenance, landscape lighting, irrigation installation and maintenance, and turf installation. They even do holiday lighting for your yard during the holiday season. So if your yard's not up to par, give MasterCuts a call for a free quote, 662-607-7773, mastercutslawn.com. Sign an annual contract. Mention the podcast. First cut will be on them.
Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. It is harryalexander.com. Send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com. Registration for Oxford Park Commission Youth Soccer for the fall 2017 season is currently going on through July the 7th. Cost is just $55 per child. There's multi-child discounts available. Age range 4 to 16. It's classified via the year of your child's birth. This year's season will begin in late August and run through October. Schedules will be posted 2 weeks before the season starts, and games are played at beautiful FNC Park. The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. With OUB, you get the Kasasa cash checking account. OUB will pay you 2.5% interest on your balance up to $50,000, and they'll refund your ATM fees nationwide. There's free online bill pay, mobile check deposit using the app. So much there with Kasasa. You can get a one-year CD right now at OUB, 1.75% APY. And there's the three-year triple option CD paying just over 2% APY, where you can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if their three-year CD rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Podcast also brought to you by Michael Oswalt. He's a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi. He works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. It's by far the largest broker of land in Mississippi. Look him up on his site, gotland.com. That's got-land.com. Right now, the land market's really hot. If you're on the fence about selling your land, your hunting club share, or your home with acreage, now's the time. Give Michael a call. He's ready to meet with you and explain the process. If he can't earn your business in that meeting, he doesn't deserve it. Give him a call, 662-719-3967. Visit his Facebook page or send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com. Last but not least, the podcast brought to you by the Rebel Locker Room, West Jackson Avenue in Oxford. It's the place to go to get all of your officially licensed Ole Miss gear, all the colors, all the styles, everything you're looking for there at the Rebel Locker Room. Also, Ole Miss season tickets available, football season tickets available, OleMissTix.com. That's OleMissTix.com.
Yeah, Dan Wolkin will appear on the Rebel Locker Room hotline tomorrow for Tuesday's show. Also, it's pretty close to wrapping up. Congratulations to Braden Thornberry. Pretty good week in his first PGA Tour event. Finishes tied for fourth. Staying an amateur, if he was a professional, that would have made $252,000 yesterday for his efforts. He beat Adam Scott, Phil Mickelson, Ricky Fowler, and a host of others, including a lot of major winners there. So handled himself well. I believe he improved by maybe two shots every round. I think he went like 71 or like 70, 69, 67, 65 or something. So 65 on Sunday may have been the best round of the day, 5 under on Sunday. So
I'm sure our friend Chris Malloy was really happy for Braden. There also had to be a little part of him that said, well, no one could blame him now.
Yeah, Braden Thornberry in the last 3 weeks or so has won an NCAA national title. He has won the Heisman Trophy of golf, essentially, with the Haskins Award. And now he has played in one PGA Tour event and has a tied for fourth finish, which is the best finish by an amateur in that tournament since 1965 and the best finish by an amateur in a PGA Tour event, period, since Lee McCoy had a fourth place finish in the Valspar in 2016. So, not a bad couple of weeks for Mr. Thornberry. Very highly regarded on PGAtour.com. They did a lot of interviews, a lot of stuff with him as the champion. I'm sure he'll get plenty more chances to play all around. He already has an exemption into the RSM Classic in the fall, a PGA Tour event that is hosted by Davis Love because Braden won the Jones Cup earlier in the year. So, yeah, he's doing okay for himself. Got a lot of TV time yesterday. I think yesterday was the only day he wore Ole Miss stuff, but he had on a good bit of Ole Miss apparel yesterday. Obviously, he's had the Ole Miss bag the entire time. But anyway, had a pro caddy Kip Henley on the bag. I think that helped him out as well. They kind of bounced stuff off to each other. Braden kind of likes to talk, and Kip's quite the talker as well. I've actually tried to reach out to him to get him on the podcast one day because he's a funny dude. So, yeah, congrats to Braden. Pretty good week there, and I'm sure he was pleased, and obviously he made the decision to keep his amateur status, and he has more work to do at this level. But going to bed last night and knowing, had I checked the different box at some point, I would have a $252,000 check. It's quite the thing to have to deal with in my head, at least, if not his.
Yeah, the other side of that is you now know beyond any shadow of any doubt that you can play at that level.
Hey, there's a lot to be said for that.
Oh, there's a whole lot to be said for that. So now he's got to make a decision.
Yeah, hey, you're going out there and you missed the cut and you finished 86th, then you go, okay, it's in your head, you know the truth. It's only one tournament. Look, I'm going to finish 86th in a lot of tournaments, and yeah, it's still okay. But then when you go out there and finish fourth, you go, well, hey, got enough game for this.
Yeah. Andy Staples, by the way, full circle, 2 minutes ago. I know this is not the best pod in the world, but for those of you who don't know Andy, I've known Andy since he was covering Florida for the Tampa Tribune or wherever he was back in the day. Andy's really good. There's just no bias. There's just not. He's an entertaining, funny guy. He says, and I quote, "The only way this suit helps Ole Miss is if those players recant. If they repeat what they said under oath with no proof, they lied, ... That is what's fascinating. I agree completely. From the NCAA case here, if none of the witnesses, meaning Lewis and Jones and all of those people, recant, and the NCAA goes forward with the accusations that are in the NOA, there could be a moment down the road where legally the Terry Warrens and those type people win damages and do damage to the investigators in this case. But by then, the damage to the Ole Miss program will have been done. That's where this is. What's the most fascinating thing here now is, does this make the NCAA investigators blink? And if it doesn't, there might not be time for these civil suits to help Ole Miss in the NCAA case.
Yeah, we also get into discussion then of what is constituted as proof pending some of these statements and what more is dug up during, I guess, discovery and also during the any testimony that would happen. So
yeah.
I don't know. More tomorrow, obviously. Again, Dan Wolkin will join us on tomorrow's podcast and on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline. So thanks for listening. Last week or so has been good in that regard. So we appreciate that, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.